Hi, this is Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, telling you to stay tuned to WNJC 1360 AM for Thursday in the Doghouse, coming right up.
Mama was a mutt, Daddy was one too. Me, I'm a little bit of everything. Everything that.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse, a radio show created to educate and inform pet guardians who love dogs. I'm your host, Rini Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer.
And I'm your host, Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny.
If you're tuning in for the first time, we welcome you and hope you'll tune in each week from 10 to 10:30 every Thursday morning right here on WNJC 1360 AM. If you want to catch up on previous shows that we've done, our podcasts are available on our websites at www.jerseydogtrainer.com and www.thedogsupernanny.com. Karen and I are both professional dog trainers. Karen is located in central New Jersey, and I'm in South Jersey. We not only train dogs in obedience, we also help dogs who have major behavior problems, like fearfulness, separation anxiety, and aggressiveness shown toward humans and other dogs. Our goal is to help keep dogs in their homes and prevent them from going into shelters or rescue. We also help get rescue dogs acclimated into their forever homes once they've gotten adopted. We have a guest on our show today. Her name is Maria Goodavage. Maria is the New York Times best-selling author of Soldier Dogs, The Untold Story of America's Canine Heroes. She's been a reporter for USA Today and the San Francisco Chronicle. Maria has had a long-standing passion for the dogs of war, which started when her dad, also an author, used to tell her about the stray pups he took in while overseas during World War II, and about the military dogs who helped save lives, and sometimes the sanity of the soldiers. Maria lives in San Francisco with her husband, her daughter, and her affable Labrador retriever, Jake, who she talks about a lot in the book. Before we talk to Maria about soldier dogs, Karen wants to let you know about the services she offers in the Keyport, New Jersey area and its surrounding towns.
Are you the owner of a fearful or aggressive dog and don't know where to turn? Have you called other trainers and they've turned you down because they don't want to deal with an aggression case? Then My Best Friend Dog Training and its special service, the Dog Super Nanny, is maybe just what you're looking for. We do in-home private consultations. We're located in Keyport, New Jersey, and we do travel. Our phone number is 732-533-9376, and our website is mybestfrienddogschool.com. We are positive-based trainers and don't use physical punishment or fear as a way to motivate your dog. We use games and fun as a way to do that, and we also help you during the whole process. So give us a call. We're here for you. 732-533-9376.
Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. This is Karen Fazio, the Dog Super Nanny, and today we have Maria Goodavage on the phone. She is the author of Soldier Dogs. And for those who are not familiar with the book yet, Maria writes about Cairo, the Belgian Malinois, who helped the SEAL Team 6 capture Bin Laden. Thank you for joining the show, Maria.
Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. You know, I have to ask you, and you probably get this question a lot, you know, what inspired you to write this book? What inspired you to write Soldier Dogs?
Well, as the intro in your show so nicely, actually told my story, I grew up in a home where my dad was a writer, but he had been in the Army in World War II, and he wasn't a dog handler, but he did adopt some strays, and he also saw the effect that real military dogs had in the war on his missions. They would save lives as sentries. trees and scouts, and also certainly back at camp at the end of the day, they would just be there to comfort the troops. He said before he got his strays, he was really, it was still helpful to have a dog around, just, you know, a little piece of home. So I grew up with that, and then I became a journalist, and I started writing a lot about dogs after a while, and I was collecting books on war dog history. It's always been a fascination for me, and gearing up to write a book, and then the Bin Laden raid happened last year, and it was well publicized that, well, it was a leak at first, but that there was a dog along on the mission, and as you mentioned, the dog is a Belgian Malinois named Cairo, and I didn't realize that other people didn't realize that there are actually dogs in the military until I saw the huge reaction of surprise and amazement by the public. I write regularly for Dogster.com, and my audience there was just, even though I had written about military dogs occasionally, they were just blown away, as was much of the world, about what the dog may have done on the mission. We don't know for sure exactly what he did, but just the fact that dogs have the capabilities to save lives and to go in there in the fight and on these big missions and do what they do.
It's really interesting.
And Maria, I'm reading your book, and I tell you what, for a nonfiction book, I can't put it down. It's just, I love it. I really do, and I'm going to make sure a lot of people read it. Your book features a lot of behind-the-scenes reporting. How in the world did you gain access to these government facilities? I'm sure most people don't.
It wasn't easy, and I really had to prove myself through a lot of hard work and convincing some of these places that, you know, I'm going to do a good job here, and I'm here to tell the story of these dogs as it's meant to be told. And some of the places were a little easier than others. I would probably still be waiting for permission at the Yuma Proving Ground. I don't know if you've gotten to that part of the
great
pre-deployment training, but they weren't going to be letting me in. It was actually Gunny Knight. He's a great gunnery sergeant who helps so many people. He's helped save so many lives with the training that he gives the troops in their pre-deployment training. He just saw this, and he said, you know what, people need to know about these dogs and these teams and what they do.
Right.
So I got great access there and at some other places where I had to jump through a lot more hoops to get it. But
right. But
I did, and I was thrilled because a lot of people hadn't been able to. There are no other book authors and you know, really, actually, not too many journalists at all who have been at these places, and I got really great firsthand insights into them, including, you know, personal insight when I got to catch a dog. I don't know if you got to that.
Yes, we're going to talk about that in a little while. I couldn't believe you did that, but and as a matter of fact, there's a picture of you in the book doing this, and we're not even going to say what catching a dog means right now, but it looked like you were dressed in street clothes. You know, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
Karen, did you have another question?
I do. You know, what are the most common breeds used by the military, and how do they get these dogs?
Oh, that's a good question. The most common breeds that I encountered were Belgian Malinois and German Shepherds. The Belgian Malinois, as you know, is sort of more lithe, lean, light version of a German Shepherd. They're a little more resilient. They don't get the hip problems that German Shepherds get. And they will work until they drop, which is something that handlers actually have to watch out for. They just are so passionate about their jobs. A lot of the dogs now are actually Labrador Retrievers. That's in a special program that's not run in the traditional military working dog way out of where they're trained in Texas and all that, but they are pretty common as well, and they're obviously just used as sniffer dogs. They're not going to be used as patrol and attack dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And you can actually have little breeds, and we can talk about that as well, like Jack Russell Terrier I ran into in a submarine.
Yeah, he was.
How did they get the dogs? How did they get to the military?
The military, the DOD, goes shopping overseas for these dogs. Believe it or not, we have to go to Europe for these dogs because there's such a long tradition of dog sports or dog police sports over there. They've been breeding these dogs for this purpose for many, many decades, or in some cases a couple hundred years.
Mm-hmm.
So they're getting these dogs overseas from breeders who breed for this specific cause, shall I say, of military and police dogs around the world. And they sell from places like Germany, the Netherlands, a lot of Eastern European countries sell us these Belgian Malinois and these German Shepherds primarily. And we bring them back. We get them at about age 2 and bring them back and train them up here in whatever job they're going to be doing. We do have a breeding program, though. It's being developed at Lackland Air Force Base, which is where dog school is, where all the dogs go to get trained, and all the handlers, who are military police, actually, go and get their training as well. And this breeding program is quite successful. Their goal is to get about 100 new pups, viable pups, a year for the program. So right now, they're about halfway there. They've got about 50, 60, 70 who will be good for being military dogs. And they're working on increasing that. And they're all Belgian Malinois. These are Belgian Malinois that they're breeding because they want to buy American. They want to keep it local.
Right.
Belgian Malinois seem to be the perfect dog for this job, and I believe during sometime in the book, somebody, one of the soldiers said that to foster one of these dogs, they're eating machines, they're chewing machines.
Yeah, the nickname is they're Maligators.
Great.
So they're great. They're great for training for patrol work where they have to use their teeth and bite the bad guy. But people do get to foster these dogs. If you live within 2 hours, which your listeners probably don't, mm-hmm. Within 2 hours of San Antonio, which is where Lackland Air Force Base is, you can foster one of these pups for several months, starting at, I think, about 3 months old. Mm-hmm. They're changing that a little bit. And you can keep them for several months, and you just have to really, really puppy-proof your home, because I've talked to people who said, oh, my God, my furniture's dead. Everything's gone.
Right.
They're just complete Maligators. But that's part of their energy. That's just part of who they are. And you don't want to really train that out of them. You just have to protect your home from them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Time.
Actually, I'm not so sure that I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to say anything against the Malinois, but they are working dogs, and I think that people who buy them or adopt them really don't know what they're getting into when they bring these dogs home, because they're such passionate working dogs, and they are pretty mouthy,
Yeah, and they have such energy as well. So usually by the time people adopt them at the end of their career,
right.
they're a little bit more mellow, but not always. I mean, sometimes they have such high energy that the people just don't know what to do, and they're not always going into it fully realizing this, I think.
Right.
So some have sort of abrupt awakenings, but they're so attached to these dogs that most of them really make it work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Throughout the years, I've heard some really awful stories about how the police train their dogs, how the military trains their dogs, and the only thing that I've really ever heard is that they use pretty harsh methods, stating that they can't use rewards because this is really serious work. Is that really true? Is that what you saw there?
Oh, and that was the biggest surprise for me, I think, going into this. That I thought, military tough dogs are gonna be really difficult to watch them being trained, and what I found across the board, DOD through all the services, was this amazingly positive, not compulsory, but super positive, rewarding training where these handlers, the dogs are all about mouths. They choose dogs who just want that reward of the Kong or the ball so much that they'll do whatever it takes to get that. That's their paycheck. And so these dogs have already come to them with a passion for that. So when they get that, they are so happy, and they will work really hard to get that. And the other half of the equation is handler praise.
Mm-hmm.
The handlers in the beginning of becoming handlers are trained. They don't just go, okay, good boy, Rex.
Right.
They have to get super excited and super hyped up, and their voices go way up, and they almost sound, they're about an octave higher than normal, and they're
right.
Praising their dogs. The dogs eat this up, and they will do anything for their handlers
mm-hmm.
or their trainers when they get this praise. So it was extremely positive. Now, that being said, and that is the official way, and that's the way they do it, there are times when people have been too aggressive about let's say, well, they've punished their dogs, and they will, and there have been cases where it has been pretty violent, and that is very isolated, and when that happens, it's kind of kept quiet within let's say the kennel, and that handler who does that, who gets a little out of control, is they take the law into their own hands sometimes, and because they don't want their dogs to be hurt. And so if someone, this isn't actually a case of violence, but this just shows sort of like if you mistreat your dog, you're going to get it. And so this one dog, again, not abuse, but this one guy forgot his dog in a trailer, in a dog trailer. He just forgot about him, and it was hot, and it was in the south in the summer. And thankfully, they got to the dog before it was too late, and the dog was fine. But they took this handler, and they tied him up, and they put him in the trailer and left him. They took him out to the desert and left him for a couple hours to show him what it was like, and he's never done it again.
Yeah,
but that was sort of like that quid pro quo. They just don't want anyone messing with these.
Yeah, I read that, and I was really happy to hear stuff like that. You know,
it's really surprising. Yes, they do in training. You know, they do get little corrections, the jerk on the choke collar, mm-hmm. but it's not huge, and they're not using pinches, and mm-hmm. The dogs seem to really respond to this very mm-hmm. well. I think they're very careful about the dogs they choose.
So when you were watching them being trained, there was nothing that they did to the dog that would have made you feel uncomfortable?
Nothing at all. And this is, you know, a lot of time I just blended into the background, and these people, most of the handlers didn't even know I was there most of the time. I was just sort of hanging around.
Right.
And the trainers at Blackland. And they were just, I have to say, you know, I've certainly done more than I saw anyone do with my dog when he was young. You know, I wasn't so good at you know, figuring out how to train. So, you know, a couple times it's like, I think I misused this choke, and I don't even use a choke now. But but they do use chokes there, and they're very well used. They were not harsh at all. They you know, but they do use chokes, and I know some people are against that as well. So I was never saw anything that concerned me, which, again, I was shocked. I just thought, wow, that's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
But what's great about that is it kind of blows that whole theory that people that are harsh with dogs, you know, use all of the, you know, this is how they train the police, this is how they train military dogs. It's so nice that you're able to share that with our audience and let them know that.
I'm very, very happy.
We have more questions for you, but we're going to take a quick break so that Renee can share some of the services that she offers in the South Jersey area as a certified trainer and certified behavior consultant.
Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com.
Welcome back to Thursday in the Doghouse. We've been speaking with Maria Gudovich, and she is the author of Soldier Dogs, the stories about working dogs in our military. And Maria, at some point in the book, you mentioned catching a dog. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's a funny expression that they use for these dogs who, if you've ever seen a military dog demonstration or police dog demonstration, you'll see a dog, powerful dog, run at a person who is hopefully wearing some kind of protection and bite onto that part of the person that is covered with whatever. I wore an arm. So it's called a sleeve, a bite sleeve, and it was protecting my arm. But I got into the situation kind of, you know, in a backwards way. I was just watching the training at Lackland Air Force Base, and I was watching all these dogs bite these bite these trainers and these handlers, and you know, not them, but they're pretty much working on bite sleeves. Some of them did wear full body suits because the dog might, you know, bite anywhere. But as I was watching, I heard someone say, "Hey, you want to catch a dog?" Well, who are they talking to? And
I don't think they're wild into
me. And I thought, well, you know, I can't turn down that. You know, and I thought, you know, this is Disneyland. Nothing's going to happen. And I put the sleeve on and I got the instructions, because you have to be very careful about what you do and what body part you wave, because if you're attracting the dog to the wrong part of your body, they're going to go. So if I started like shaking my head, you wave your arm a certain way and the dog is set loose and runs at you and attacks full speed ahead. And just before they let the dog go, I realized, oh wow, this is so not Disneyland. And I flashed back to this scene that I saw earlier in the morning. I met a handler, a new Navy handler, whose ear had been ripped in half. He had half an ear a week before by getting between two of these dogs who gotten into a fight and trying to pry them apart. So I realized, as this dog was, you know, being let loose and running toward me, I was thinking of the ear. And I was like, oh my God. And so I just did everything as I was supposed to do, and sure enough, she just ran and got my arm, and then I had to kind of keep her on the arm and, you know, act like the bad guy trying to get her off. And it was quite a powerful bite. I was definitely sent back a couple of steps, and I'm really glad I did it. And, you know, the funny thing about this story is, I'm going to meet this dog soon, I hope. She's in Texas, but I'm in touch with the new owners of this dog. I say new owners because it turns out she was an old lady when she did this. So
really?
She was tough. I mean, she was tough as nails. She's about 8 years old last year, and I didn't know she was ready for retirement, but she was. So I guess they didn't stick the biggest, toughest dog on me, but she was definitely really powerful. And if they did a bigger dog, I can't imagine, you know, what that would be like. I'm tall, but I'm not a big, you know, muscular person. So it really gave me a profound respect for what these dogs can do.
Really? What did the bite feel like? I mean, did you just feel pressure, or did you actually feel a little pain?
No, I didn't feel anything, because the sleeve is a big, very hard plastic with metal lining, metal strips lining it and protecting it, and on the outside it's covered with jute, so that's a kind of a, it's like really hard burlap, I guess. I don't know how to describe it, but
it's
the dog
catwalk,
doesn't have to bite into plastic, and I didn't feel anything except the pressure of the dog sort of like pushing my body back at that time and just trying not to fall over. So no, you don't feel pain, but there are times when new handlers particularly don't have the technique down, or the dog just may go, whoa. Sometimes the handlers run away on purpose. So, because, you know, the bad guys, I'm just going to stand there, right?
Right.
They're going to run oftentimes. So they're running, maybe one part of their body, maybe they have the bite sleeve on, and they figure they're going to turn around just at the right time, and the dog will bite the sleeve.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the dog doesn't always
right.
go for the target there.
Right.
They're trying to get them to. So it ends up a lot of these people end up with a lot of extra bites. Each bite, you know, they have little marks, little scars, and each one is a story.
Yes. Well, when I was reading the book, they talked about one incident where there was two dogs were, you know, going to go at it with each other, and then one of the handlers had to put his dog's head between his legs, going in the opposite direction. What is dog aggression a common thing there? Is that what they actually want? I mean, after all, they don't want these dogs looking at each other and saying, "Let's play."
Well, you know, it's a good question, because there is a lot of dog aggression. That is the one thing that's another thing that surprised me, is you would think that these dogs, they're not trained to be dog aggressive.
Okay.
They just seem to have it in them, and part of it may be that maybe they're not terribly well socialized in their first 2 years of life when they're overseas.
Right.
And then they come here and they want to snuff out some other dogs. Some are fine. Some are great with other dogs. And it just depends on the dog. But I was really surprised at that level of dog aggression. And I've talked to kennel masters and handlers who really want to see that change, because there's no point in a dog being a dog aggressor. I mean, they're not after dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They're after people.
Right. But then again, wouldn't, if they were friendly toward other dogs, and let's say they were working in the field and they saw, you know, another dog 20 feet away or 50 feet away, and they were friendly, I mean, wouldn't that be a distraction, and maybe one dog would want to go toward the other dog?
No more of a distraction than if they wanted to kill the other dog. So
okay.
They're I think that they would really like the dogs to get along well, because they the dog on the job is usually so focused on what he or she is doing that that isn't going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the kennel masters I talked with are trying to get the dogs to be less aggressive with each other by actually taking them out together, mm-hmm. letting them out in an enclosed area together safely, you know, just knowing which ones will get along, but introducing them to this sort of group dynamic so
okay.
that they don't have to worry about this, because it's not only dangerous for the dogs, it's dangerous for the handlers who have to get between them.
Sure.
To stop the
right. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Are these dogs well cared for, and like, are they well cared for when they get injured, and what happens to them if like their injuries prevent them from going back into the field?
Yeah, their medical, let me just say, I wish I had their medical coverage. They're,
really?
They're, when they're at Lackland Air Force Base, or just, you know, pretty much any base I've dealt with, they get top care. At Lackland, they have an incredible state-of-the-art hospital, and they will be referred there from around the world. If a dog gets injured or is hurt in, you know, in Ohio or somewhere, they can take care of them there. They may be shipped down there for treatment. They come there for top-notch, truly state-of-the-art treatment. And if a dog has a problem anywhere, at any base, the priority is getting them extremely good veterinary care with an army. All the veterinarians are in the army. Are army veterinarians, and so they, if one can't handle it, they send them to someone who can, mm-hmm. and they will just put them up until then. And these vets are so become pretty attached to these dogs as well, and they really want to see them. You know, mm-hmm. get. The
what happens if they get an injury that prevents them from returning to work? What happens to
then
the
dogs? Then they're done. That's it. They get retired. And if they get an injury that's pretty serious, they will try their best before adopting the dog out to fix it. So
mm-hmm.
I saw a few dogs in Lackland Air Force Base's hospital that were being treated for their injuries and illnesses before they were being adopted out. So
mm-hmm.
they try to get these dogs, as you know, fixed up as they can before they adopt them out.
Mm-hmm. So they adopt them out. They don't euthanize them or do anything like that.
If they're severely injured, just you know, if it's just to the point where the dog would only be in protracted pain for the rest of his or her life,
right.
then yes, they will euthanize. It's not common, but it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the good news, as far as, I'm glad you brought up euthanasia and dogs, because until 2000, most bite-trained dogs, like the one who I caught in Lackland, at the end of their career, they would be euthanized.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Wasn't Cairo adopted out to a family?
We know nothing about Cairo, no. There's no indication officially at all that Cairo was adopted out to anyone. We don't even know exactly what he did on the mission. The Navy SEALs don't talk very often about these things, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know, you know, where you heard that. But
I'm married to one, so believe me, I know they don't talk
Are you
about
really?
Anything.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. That's another story, Karen. We can talk about that some other whole show.
So you know. So that's,
yeah.
But no, if you have some insight.
The great mystery, I call
Wow.
But you know what? Cairo, a lot of people called after the raid on the Bin Laden compound and wanted to adopt Cairo. Tons of people called Lackland Air Force Base and said, can I adopt that dog? So
mm-hmm.
it actually increased the adoption rates.
That's good. I have a million questions. Unfortunately, we only have about 2 minutes left. I want you to tell people where they can purchase your book, and also if listeners and readers want to honor and contribute to the Soldier Dog cause, what can they do?
Okay, great. Well, you can go to my website, which is soldierdogs.com, and I have a lot of resources in there. One for buying the book. You can buy it on, first of all, a lot of bookstores, but also on all Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's available as an audiobook as well.
Cool.
The resources, I have a resources page, which will connect people to various dog nonprofits that are out there to help military dogs and make their lives and their handlers' lives better. There's actually one that's based in the Jersey, Philly area that I love. It's U.S. War Dogs Association. They can help you put together care packages, or they can do it. You can donate to them, and they'll put together a care package to ship overseas to a dog and handler team. And there are a lot of other resources that you can use on that page to honor these dog teams as well.
Wow, that's great. We have like a minute and a half left. left. If, can you just touch on the subject of canine PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder?
Yeah, unfortunately, it exists, and the DOD finally decided that last year that this is a real malady and it needs to be treated. The symptoms, the signs, are very similar to those in humans who have PTSD, hypervigilance, increased startle response, fear of a lot of things that
right.
we normally be fearful of or they wouldn't. And there are treatments, drug treatments, and behavioral interventions. A lot of dogs get a lot of R&R and tundra loving care, and they can come through it. A quarter of the dogs never will get past it while they're in the military, at least, and they're adopted out.
Maria, thank you so much for joining us in the doghouse today. I hope everybody reads this book. These dogs are truly the unsung heroes of all the wars we've been having in recent years, and I hope that people recognize the importance of the dogs. They save lives all the time, and they're just wonderful. And you are, too. Thank you so much for enlightening us and to come on here and tell us about your story and the story of these dogs. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Very, very interesting book.
Thank you.
Have a great day, everybody.
Have a good weekend.
See you next week.
Take care.
I'm glad you're home, but where you've been since 2 o'clock, I've been holding it in. Grab the leash, let's go chop chop. If I don't get out of soon, the court's gonna pop. Twist and shout, ooh, I gotta go out. No, I'd love to stay and talk, of course, but I really need to see you.